Israeli forces bombed a group of civilians at the entrance of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, killing a Palestinian man and his son. According to the health ministry, at least 60 Palestinians were killed across Gaza in a matter of 24 hours. The regime resumed its onslaught on Gaza on March the 18th, shattering a two-month ceasefire. The death toll from the Israeli genocide is nearing 50,700, with over 115,000 others injured. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabbe joined us earlier with the latest updates on the renewed Israeli attacks on the blockaded territory. Let's take a listen.
Let me say that a brutal attack took place here in Deir al-Balah city in the vicinity of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here that targeted a Palestinian civilian alongside his son. And he was, as you know, Salman Abid. And by the way, he's the cousin of our correspondent, Abu Bakr Abid, here. So I would like to seize this opportunity and express my deep condolences to our brother Abu Bakr over this loss of his cousin. In the meantime, when it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli occupation forces continue their brutal and genocidal attacks against Ash-Shuja'iyah neighborhood, whereas the Israeli attacks are still ongoing amid the military operation, which is still taking place there, targeting more Palestinian civilians for the third consecutive day. And those attacks have never ceased for a while. We are talking about more Palestinian civilians are still slaughtered, while the Israeli occupation forces are still expanding their military operation, targeting more neighborhoods and more streets in Ash-Shuja'iyah neighborhood. And in addition to that, several residential buildings were pounded by the Israeli fighter jets over the past couple of hours in a Zaytun neighborhood. Needless to mention as well that we are talking about at least four Palestinian civilians were slaughtered in Beit Hanun city in the northern Gaza Strip after they were targeted by the Israeli fighter drones. All in all, we can say clearly that the Israeli occupation forces are still intensifying their brutal and deadly attacks against the Palestinian people, while on the ground the Palestinian people are still devastated with the brutal measures taken by the Israeli occupation forces.
The United Nations Children's Fund has slammed Israel for depriving more than 1 million children in Gaza of life-saving assistance for more than a month. In a statement on the occasion of Palestinian Children's Day, UNICEF said the continued blockade of aid supply to Gaza constitutes a violation of international humanitarian law and has dire consequences for children. It added that the continued prevention of aid delivery has exacerbated malnutrition and spread of diseases while increasing child mortality rate in Gaza. UNICEF said there is enough formula milk for only 400 children for a month. It stressed that infant food supplies are being depleted as thousands of aid packages remain stalled behind Gaza's closed crossings. The agency warned that children receiving treatment for malnutrition are at grave risk due to the blockade of Gaza. He said the closure of malnutrition treatment centers since the resumption of the Israeli aggression on March the 18th threatens the lives of hundreds of children relying on these centers. A video is circulating online showing Israeli forces firing on a group of Palestinian paramedics in Gaza's southern city of Rafah. The footage was found on the phone of one of the paramedics who worked for Gaza's Civil Defense and Palestine Red Crescent Society. The video was filmed on March 23rd. The medics were on a rescue mission in Rafah's Tel al-Sultan neighborhood when the attack happened. Their ambulances and fire trucks were clearly marked and had their emergency lights on as they came under fire. At least 15 paramedics were killed in the strike. Hamas has strongly condemned the attack, saying the video is proof of yet another war crime in the regime's genocidal campaign against Palestinians. The resistance group said the video captures the deliberate, cold-blooded slaughter of civil defense teams. Hamas said the video is irrefutable visual evidence which exposes Israel's lies, proves the systematic targeting of humanitarian workers, and constitutes premeditated murder under international law. Gaza's civil defense has also called for an international probe into the execution-style killing of the medics and aid workers. The violent Israeli attack on rescue teams in Gaza's Rafah continues to draw condemnations. Palestinian Red Crescent Society spokesperson Nibal Farsakh has rejected the regime's narrative and demanded an immediate investigation to ensure justice for the victims.
Although ambulances carried the internationally protected emblem and had their lights turned on, the occupation soldiers deliberately opened fire hysterically on the ambulance team, whose members were also wearing Red Crescent uniforms, and this led to the martyrdom of the teams. This video clearly and openly refutes the story presented by the occupation, which deliberately targets ambulances along with medical and health personnel. The occupation is telling a false story. The occupation has told the world that its forces targeted ambulances that were moving suspiciously without their lights on, and accuses them, as usual, with the same fabricated narrative that they belong to Hamas. This is not the first targeting of the society's teams. 27 members of the Red Crescent Society have been killed by Israeli forces while performing their humanitarian duties and while wearing the Red Crescent badge. Today, we, the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, call on the international community to conduct an immediate and independent investigation that ensures justice for the victims and holds accountable all those involved in this crime.
Israeli settlers have once again taken to the streets of Tel Aviv for another weekly demonstration demanding the release of all remaining captives held in Gaza. The protesters called on the cabinet of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to put the captives above other interests. They also urged the regime to stop violating the Gaza ceasefire deal with Hamas. Demonstrators chanted anti-war slogans calling for an immediate end to the Gaza genocide. The new rallies came amid a rise in demonstrations across the occupied territories and increasing discontent with the resumption of Israel's onslaught on Gaza. The regime restarted the Gaza attacks after refusing to enter talks on the second phase of the ceasefire deal. Israel sought an extension of the first phase of the deal, but Hamas rejected that as a violation of the original agreement. The movement says it will only release the remaining captives in exchange for the release of more Palestinian prisoners, a permanent ceasefire, and Israel's pullout from Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces say they have targeted the U.S. aircraft carrier Harry S. Truman and its accompanying warships in the Red Sea with drones and missiles.
In recent hours, the missile force and drone unit, with support from the naval forces, engaged several U.S. warships in the northern Red Sea, including the U.S. aircraft carrier Truman, using a number of cruise missiles and drones. The hours-long attack operation disrupted the enemy's ability to carry out hostile assaults on our country during the period of the strike. Additionally, the naval forces of the armed forces carried out a military operation targeting the U.S. supply ship accompanying the Truman aircraft carrier with a ballistic missile.
Yahya Sari emphasized that Yemen's leadership, people, and armed forces are committed to defending the Palestinian people as a religious, moral, and humanitarian duty. He said operations against Israel and Israeli-linked ships will continue until the regime's aggression against Gaza ends and the territory's blockade is lifted. The new operation came after Yemeni forces targeted an Israeli military site in the occupied Palestinian territories using a drone. Additionally, Yemen's air defenses shot down a U.S. reconnaissance drone over Saada province with a domestically produced surface-to-air missile. The United States presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching new airstrikes on various areas across the Arab country. According to Yemeni media, the latest strikes by American warplanes targeted the Hafsin area west of Saada city with four raids. The attacks hit a store selling solar energy panels and a civilian home west of the city. Two civilians have been killed and four others injured in the strikes. Footage of the incident shows civil defense teams carrying out rescue operations and working to extinguish fires caused by the bombings. American warplanes also carried out at least five strikes east of the city of Saada. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israel operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Most of the U.S. attacks target civilian buildings, causing fatalities and injuries among civilian population. Our correspondent in Sana'a, Yusuf Mowry, joined us earlier to bring us up to speed on the latest U.S. strikes on Yemen and the country's response to them.
I think it's sending a clear message to the U.S. and to the Trump administration that has declared goals of eliminating the Yemeni armed forces eliminating their ability to impose a naval blockade on those Israeli shipments has really failed and failed across the board. You talk about the U.S. economy drastically taking a turn for the worse. Well, when you add to the mix that they've also lost over $1 billion in just 3 weeks of military operations, because the U.S. has failed to achieve any of its military objectives, now they want to go to Plan B. And experts here in Yemen suspect that the U.S. is trying to cause pockets of famine. They're trying to stir the nation into, you know, another humanitarian catastrophe similar to one that was endured here in Yemen from 2015 to 2018 during the Saudi-led coalition. But the Yemeni army and the armed forces, they assure everyone and the world that a humanitarian catastrophe, a deterioration of Yemen's economy and fabric of society will not be denigrated, because they've taken the precautionary measures over the past years to ensure that even if an all-out war was to be directed at Yemen, people will not starve to death.
Protesters have flooded Washington, D.C. and cities across the U.S. in what is anticipated to be the largest single day of protests against U.S. President Donald Trump since his return to office. Demonstrators held signs that read, "Not my president," condemning the president's executive orders, including his attacks on Social Security, harsh trade measures, and alliance with billionaires like Elon Musk. Events have been planned in all 50 states, as well as in Canada and Mexico. Pro-Palestine protesters are also joining the rallies to slam the U.S. support for the Israeli regime's renewed genocide in Gaza and the Trump administration's crackdown on campus protests. Meanwhile, rallies are also taking place in Berlin, Paris, London, and Lisbon in support of the nationwide protests in the U.S.
Paris against Trump! Paris against Trump! Paris against Trump!
Hundreds, mostly Americans, are marching on the streets of Europe, voicing concern over the state of democracy in the country. In Paris, expats branded Trump a racist con man, while Berliners slammed Elon Musk's role in slashing government safeguards. Trump was inaugurated for a second time on January 20th. Almost immediately afterwards, he wielded sweeping executive orders to enact a radical conservative vision known as Project 2025, which centralizes authority and dismantles liberal institutions. Now, to talk more on this, let's cross over to Kitchener, Ontario, where we have Mr. Robert Fantina, author and journalist, with us. Mr. Fantina, your thoughts on these mass rallies across the U.S. in all 50 states, as well as Canada and Mexico, and even a handful of European countries. And also, what is Trump's real plan?
A lot worse than people expected him to be. Now, his spokespeople say he has this overwhelming mandate to carry out his policies. He won less than 50% of the vote, so it's hardly an overwhelming mandate. But protests in the United States and around the world are because of his tariffs, because of the cuts that Elon Musk is doing through his so-called Department of Government Efficiency, which is simply taking an axe to government agencies and offices and cutting people arbitrarily and indiscriminately, which is going to negatively affect the services that people in the United States are receiving. And the tariffs, of course, are impacting people around the world, not only in the United States. Trump's goal in all this is, as the protesters are saying, is to benefit the millionaires and billionaires that are in his cabinet, that are his closest associates, such as Elon Musk. But if you look at most of his cabinet members are at least multimillionaires, if not billionaires, and they're completely out of touch with the normal voter, the regular voter in the United States. So this idea that that Trump can act as a dictator, which he is doing, these executive orders are supposed to be for emergency situations. He has now signed over 100 of them, which is either more than or very close to what Joe Biden signed in a four-year period, and it's been just a few months with Donald Trump. So his goal is to be a king, be a dictator, and ram through laws in the United States that are damaging to the people, that are damaging the economy because he simply doesn't care about them. He cares about pleasing his rich supporters. And we know he loves it when people bow down to him and admire him and respect him, which is why world leaders manipulate him so easily. But what we're seeing around the world now is people saying, this is enough, this has to stop, and they're doing something about it.
Now, Mr. Fantina, the U.S. is always boasting about democracy and freedom of speech, but it seems that it's the opposite way around.
Yes. Well, the U.S. is known for its hypocrisy. Now, the fact that Donald Trump is arresting people with permanent resident status, with student visas, because they have spoken out against genocide just shows what a lie it is, what a myth it is, that the United States is a beacon of democracy. It isn't. It is a country where people are criticized for speaking out, for supporting international law, for protesting against genocide. And as Trump is arresting people and sending them to rendition sites around the world, or if he's keeping them in the United States, he's sending them far away from lawyers and family. This is the way that dictators behave.
There you have it, Mr. Robert Fantina, author and journalist, joining us from Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. Mr. Fantina, it's always nice talking to you, sir. Thank you for your time. With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care, and bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. During the 1948 war, Zionist regime forces committed more than 30 documented massacres in Palestine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "It is important to know the origins of the Israeli lobby to realize the significant sway it has had on American politics and the politicians. For that, we have to go back in time to post-World War II history to begin to correct the injustices that generations of Palestinians have faced and to become a society that can live with its conscience. The story of Palestine and its people must be told." After the Second World War, the United States made the decision to tie its destiny to the ethno-nationalist settler colonial regime of Israel. And since then, the Palestinian people have stood alone in their struggle. The establishment of the fabricated regime of Israel was a violent process that has never ended. Beginning in 1947, Zionist paramilitary forces launched large-scale attacks on Palestinian towns and villages, leading ultimately to the Nakba, the catastrophe, the culminating stage of the Zionist ethnic cleansing project. During the Nakba, 531 Palestinian towns and villages were destroyed. 15,000 Palestinians were murdered. 800,000 were forcibly driven from their homeland to the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and to neighboring Arab countries, and 70 massacres were committed. Before Israel's declaration of statehood on May 14, 1948, Zionist militias had committed numerous massacres whose histories have largely been suppressed. Baldat Asheikh, on December 31st, in 1947, 70 Palestinians massacred. Sa'sa, on February 14th, in 1948, 16 houses and their inhabitants blown up. Deir Yassin, on April 9th, in 1948, 107 were killed, including scores of children, women, and elders. Some victims were found maimed, raped, and then killed. Masses of men were put on trucks and paraded across Al-Quds before being taken to a quarry to be executed. These atrocities were committed by Irgun and Stern gangs led by Menachem Begin and Yitzhak Shamir, respectively, who would later become prime ministers of the fabricated regime of Israel. And Abu Shusha on May 13th in 1948. Despite efforts of residents to protect their homes, the village fell to occupation. 60 Palestinians massacred. During the 1948 war, Zionist regime forces committed more than 30 documented massacres in Palestine. Israeli regime military historian Yuri Milstein has suggested that there were more than 100. In ensuing years, Israel continued its campaigns of forced displacement and massacres. Notably, it was Ribia massacre of October 14, 1953, that gave birth to what would become the most powerful pro-Israel lobby in the United States. Born in the blood of the natives of Palestine, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, has spared no efforts to ensure that Israel's ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians be kept hidden from the American people. It is important to know the origins of the Israeli lobby to realize the significant sway it has had on American politics and politicians. For that, we have to go back in time to post-World War II history. Harry S. Truman is president of the United States regime and running for re-election with few prospects and little support until the Israeli lobby literally enters the campaign in the person of Abraham Feinberg, a hosiery manufacturing magnate. And the rest, as they say, is history, Israeli history. The man who made Truman's 1948 election victory possible explained how it was done in an interview conducted in 1973 for the Harry S. Truman Library. Oral history interview with Abraham Feinberg. He stated in the interview that without Truman, Israel would have had very difficult days and times trying to even come into existence. Israel's American enforcers faced challenges during the Eisenhower years from an administration inclined toward a more nuanced policy. During the president's first year in office, news of the massacre in the Palestinian village of Ribia sparked widespread disapproval. Time magazine, for example, carried the story describing how Israeli regime troops shot every man, woman, and child they could find, then turned their fire on the cattle, reporting also that soldiers were seen slouching in the doorways of Palestinian homes, smoking and joking. 66 people were killed that night. 45 were blown up in their homes that had been dynamited by soldiers. The New York Times ran excerpts from the United Nations Mixed Armistice Commission in charge of the 1949 truce, deploring the act as cold-blooded murder and refuting Israeli lies about the assault. Israel's defenders quickly gathered for damage control. Isaiah L. Kennan, founder of the American Zionist Committee for Public Affairs, AZCPA, the forerunner of AIPAC, wrote of the ill effect it would have on what he called our propaganda. To manage the Gibeah fallout and to prepare for future cover-ups, Kennan created AZCPA in 1954. Under his leadership, the group grew stronger and richer when it joined with the new Conference of Presidents of the Major American Jewish Organizations, an association of top Jewish leaders who promoted Israel's interests with U.S. politicians that included presidents and secretaries of state. Influencers like Abraham Feinberg and Kennan were instrumental in selling Israel to Americans and influencing policies favoring Israel. By the time Kennan died in 1988, AIPAC had gained an outsized role in shaping U.S. policy in the West Asia region. Over the years, AIPAC has demonstrated that nothing will diminish its vested interests in Israel, including genocide. Since October 7, 2023, the death and destruction Israel's defenders have been willing to accept are woefully incomprehensible. For example, 26 days into its bombardment of Gaza, the Zionist regime military had dropped 25,000 tons of bombs, American-made bombs, on 12,000 targets, 50 bombs dropped every hour. By that date, Gaza had been bombarded with the equivalent of two nuclear bombs over an area smaller than Hiroshima in 1945. The Zionist regime has also used banned cluster and white phosphorus munitions that can cause permanent environmental damage. The pain of that destruction was explicit in the words of 61-year-old Gazan farmer Samu Abi Amir, trying to revive a patch of his own productive ground, saying, "It is as if they wanted to kill the land before they killed us." After dropping more than 85,000 tons of toxic bombs on the small enclave for 15 months, it is obvious that Israel intended to poison the soil to make Gaza uninhabitable for survivals. A November 2024 report published by the Environmental Quality Authority, an independent agency established in the 1990s by the Palestinian Authority, concluded that, as a result of the bombing, the soil of Gaza has become so polluted with toxic chemicals that it will hinder agriculture for decades. Unable to defeat the Palestinian resistance with bombs and lethal ground forces, the Tel Aviv regime has reimposed a total blockade once again on Gaza, returning to its October 2023 weapon of war, starvation and deprivation. In addition to halting humanitarian aid, the Zionist regime threatened the resistance with additional consequences if they refuse to extend phase one of the January ceasefire agreement and accept its new proposal. It is clear that the Zionist regime has no intention of putting an end to this human catastrophe that has been in the making for over 80 years. There will be no resolution until Palestinians recapture their land, Palestine. Thank you.
How do I gain closeness to Allah? Let's do three verses of the Quran. The first verse, Surah Yasin, verse 61.
So this is it's a type of colonization of the mind before they colonize the bodies.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Please stay with us. Today's tip, how to control our mind and its effect on our ubudiyah, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah. So, dear listeners, we are humbly at your service speaking about controlling our thoughts, controlling our mind, and of course its effect on our ubudiyah, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to the Almighty Allah. So when we're talking about controlling our thoughts, of course this is something that is very important, because our thoughts in many ways are the precursor to our actions, right? So when we start to think about something, then we end up acting upon that something. So this is why it is really important for us to be able to control our thoughts, control our mind, control our imagination. Now, of course, our thoughts and our imagination is one of the faculties that the Almighty Allah has given every single one of us. And of course, it is this imagination which results in creativity, has brought forth many beautiful cultural things, art, for example, architecture, for example, and many other beautiful forms of expression, poetry, etc., that come about via creativity, which of course comes via imagination, and imagination of course comes about via thinking and our thoughts. Now, we have to keep our thoughts in control, because if we start to think about things that are, for example, God forbid, haram, things that are forbidden religiously, the Almighty Allah has forbidden us from thinking about certain things, thinking about things that are haram. If we start to think about them, then this eventually will lead us towards acting upon these thoughts. So, for example, we think about stealing, and we want, for example, you know, a pair of shoes, let's say, and we don't have the money to buy the pair of shoes, so we start to think about how it would be so nice to have them. Then we think about how we don't have money. Then we think about how we should perhaps just steal these shoes. Then we start to plan how to steal the shoes. And then, God forbid, this pushes us to the last step, which is to actually practically go and steal the shoes. Now, if you pay attention, the root of the eventual action that we committed was based upon our thoughts. Even though we didn't initially think about stealing the shoes, we just had a very intense desire for those shoes. And because we did not have the permissible and halal means to acquire those shoes, we went towards something that was prohibited and was haram. One thing led to another, and we end up stealing the shoes.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
And
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Yusuf.
In the first period, the Muslims didn't have any of these sciences, but if you look at the world, it was relatively primitive, and for that reason, nobody had these sciences. So when the Muslims went into these societies, they were able to do what they did based on their justice. As they increased, the justice spread. They were known for their justice. They became exemplars of just societies relative to that period. As time increased, they developed these sciences, and they were at the cutting edge. But then they began to decline. Now, that decline from the neglect of these sciences allowed other civilizations to rise up. In their rising up, they became powerful. And because of that, they were able to come into our societies and then undermine the spiritual traditions in our cultures and in our societies and impose on us their way of living and their way of looking at the world. And this was done because we became weak and they became strong. And so there's a relationship. Both are there. But the undermining of the spiritual power of the Muslims was really a direct result of their collapse in their abilities to defend themselves. And so this is the way we find the Muslims today. They lost their sovereignty and their power. And so both are true. But, you know, what he's saying is that when the Muslims could defend themselves, they could preserve their spirituality. But when they lost the defense of themselves, these other cultures were able to come in and colonize them, shut down their madrasas, shut down their... I mean, if you look at what happened in Morocco, they shut down all these... the French shut down their colleges. They transformed... Al-Azhar was transformed by Freemasons. I mean, the Freemasons infiltrated Al-Azhar and transformed it. That's documented historically. Lord Cromer was in Egypt. He was the governor of Egypt, and he was very good friends with a lot of the Azharis, and the complete transformation. So, there, you know, these things can't be ignored, these historical truths. But remember, he's looking at a very long projection of the Ummah. He's not looking like right now we can see the spiritual crises in the Muslim Ummah. But if you look at how we got here, what he's saying is the Muslims lost their ability to defend themselves. And in losing that ability, they got conquered by other peoples. And by conquering them, they were able to bring in all of their ways of looking at the world, their material sciences. We didn't have responses to them. And so a lot of these people, and now we have, you know, with the internet and with television, all these things, we've got the Trojan horses in people's houses. I mean, Muslim kids now are growing up on films in which there's no family, there's just boyfriends and girlfriends. I mean, the Gulf states, it's all free. Western movies, it's just 24 hours on television. The kids are growing up with these things. So this is, it's a type of colonization of the mind. Before they colonized the bodies, but now the minds have been colonized. So you can, once you've colonized the minds, you can forego all of the hassles of physical occupation.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we were talking about controlling our mind, controlling our thoughts, controlling our imagination. Thinking is good. Imagination is good. Creativity is good. But again, it depends how we use these powers and these faculties that the Almighty Allah has put at our disposal. Now, we talked about how thinking about things that are haram, thinking about things that are prohibited, this leads us to acting upon those thoughts. We gave this simple example, but it was simple so that it can be understood fully. And that is when you start to think about, you know, wanting a pair of shoes, but then you don't have enough money for it, so then you end up going and stealing it. So this is how our thoughts affect our ubudiya, right? If we have positive thinking, if we think about positive things, if we think about pure things, if we think about holy things, if we think about divine things, then we will act upon that, and that will shape our ubudiya, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah. It's interesting where, you know, a lot of your modern day psychologists will talk about thinking positive, thinking healthy thoughts. And this is something that Islam has already spoken about, you know, over 1,000 years ago, before modern psychology caught up with the concepts of Islam. So this thinking positive, thinking about good things, thinking about halal and permissible things, thinking about the Holy Quran, thinking about the traditions of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, thinking about the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, all of these things help our ubudiyya. They have an effect on our ubudiyya, and they have a very positive effect on our ubudiyya, our worship and our servitude and our obedience to Allah. And on the other hand, if we don't control our thoughts and our thoughts start to wander towards things that are haram, that are prohibited, well, then this has a very negative effect on our ubudiyya, on our worship and our servitude and our obedience to Allah. And to the point where the more we think about things that are haram, the farther we will go down this path of destruction and really sadness and depression and anxiety and despair and hopelessness. But on the other hand, if we think positive, if we think about the Quran, if we read the Quran, if we read the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, then that keeps us in a very positive zone. It keeps us in a positive divine light. And of course, this has a very positive effect on our worship and our servitude and our obedience and our ubudiyya to the Almighty Allah. And so we have to find ways to be able to control this aspect of thinking, this aspect of imagination and creativity, so that it leads us closer to the Almighty Allah, and it leads us closer to the worship and servitude and obedience to Allah. And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Amin Rastani.
How do I gain closeness to Allah? Let's do three verses of the Quran. The first verse, Surah Yasin, verse 61. وَأَنِ اعْبُدُونِي هَذَا صِرَاطٌ مُسْتَقِيمٌ. Serve me, obey me. This is the Sirat al-Mustaqim. This verse is saying the straight path has to do with servitude. Servitude equals straight path. If you want to get to Allah, you have to be on Sirat al-Mustaqim. So, spirituality has criteria. The criterion is u'buduni, ubudiyya, servitude, nothing else. Next verse, Surah Dhariyat, verse 56. وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسِ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. I created jinn and man only for one purpose. لِيَعْبُدُونَ. لِيَعْبُدُونَ. This is what it is. Your purpose was to come back to me. إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. Here he's saying عُبُودِيَّة is the purpose. What does that mean? That means عُبُودِيَّة is going to get you there. When you serve Allah, the capacity grows. The more obedience, the more capacity to gain, to receive the light from Him. Third verse, Surah Hujurat, verse 13. يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّا خَلَقْنَاكُمْ مِنْ ذَكَرٍ وَأُنْثَى وَجَعَلْنَاكُمْ شُعُوبًا وَقَبَائِلَ لِتَعَارَفُوا إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ. In this verse, Allah says, we created you from male and female. I created you man and woman. I created you different tribes, different branches of people, so you get to know each other, you can identify each other. But inna akramakum indallah atqakum. The most high of you, atqakum, the one who obeys me more, the one who has more taqwa. Taqwa means obedience of Allah. Spirituality equals obedience. What hinders spirituality is disobedience. Very simple. That's our principle.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Foresight. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Nearly 40,000 Palestinians have been forcibly displaced throughout the Zionist regime's ongoing military assault in the West Bank, with only 3,000 Palestinians returned to their homes. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Electronic Intifada wrote, "We are witnessing new trails of tears in the West Bank mirroring Gaza's fate." These were the words of Francisca Albanese, UN Special Rapporteur on the occupied West Bank and Gaza recently. She was referencing the forced expulsion between 1830 and 1850 by the United States government of tens of thousands of indigenous people from their homeland east of the Mississippi toward what became Oklahoma, leading to the deaths of thousands. What Israel is doing in occupied Palestine today has a strong echoes of 1947 to 1949 Nakba and the 1967 Naxa, Albanese said, referring to the two major ethnic cleansing campaigns carried out by Zionist militias and the Israeli regime army that produced hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees. Nearly 40,000 Palestinians have been forcibly displaced throughout Israel's ongoing military assault in the West Bank, with only 3,000 Palestinians returned to their homes. The Zionist regime's war minister Israel Katz last month indicated that this displacement would be permanent as the Israeli regime army makes preparations for a long occupation of the northern refugee camps as the military assault nearly enters its third month. Albanese warned that a mass ethnic cleansing campaign is underway as the Zionist regime uses the fog of war to advance its long-standing objective of seizing Palestinian land. She said, the world, meanwhile, is pretending not to see history repeating itself. Albanese statement was issued on the same day as a report by the United Nations Human Rights Office detailing Israel's advancement of settlements in the West Bank between November 2023 and October 2024 and the illegal transfer of Jewish Israelis there. The report stated that Israel's maintenance and expansion of settlements amount to annexation of large parts of the West Bank. The Israeli regime government allocated $200 million to settlement projects from its budget in 2024, including for constructing roads between settlements, funding outposts, or backing so-called security for settlements and outposts. These acts amount to transfer by Israel of its population to occupied Palestinian territory. The transfer by Israel of parts of its own civilian population into the territory it occupies amounts to a war crime, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, said. More than 10,000 housing units were advanced or approved in existing settlements in Area C over the reporting period. Area C is the 60% of the West Bank under full Israeli regime military control, according to the Oslo Accords of 1990s. But in reality, the Zionist regime military controls the whole of the West Bank and has been conducting raids in the smaller areas where the Palestinian Authority has nominal control. By the end of October 2024, there were nearly 740,000 Israeli settlers in the West Bank, including East Al-Quds. All of Israel's settlements in the West Bank and Syria's Golan Heights are illegal under international law and are considered a war crime. In July 2024, the International Court of Justice ruled that Israel's presence in the West Bank is illegal and must end. Francesca Albanese said, Israel's conduct aiming to ethnically cleanse the land between the river to the sea amounts to a genocidal campaign to erase Palestinians as a people. The climate of revenge has prevailed in the West Bank since October 7, 2023. Settler violence has skyrocketed, leading to the forcible displacement of Palestinians from herding communities. The UN report states the line between settler and state violence blurred to a vanishing point, further enabling an increase in violence and impunity. Palestinian victims of violence increasingly refer to settler soldiers when recounting incidents to OHCHR, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. The monthly average of settler violence in 2024 was 118 incidents. This was an increase from the 108 average of 2023, which was a year in which settler violence had already reached unprecedented levels. Nearly 1,300 incidents resulted in casualties or property damage that year. That was a 51% increase in the number of incidents during 2022, and more than a twofold increase on the number of incidents during 2021. as the Zionist regime pounded Gaza recently, killing hundreds of Palestinians, the Israeli regime military assault on the West Bank's refugee camps continued unabated. This has been the worst military assault on the West Bank since the Second Intifada nearly 2 decades ago. Nearly 70 Palestinians have been killed since January. The Israeli regime army uprooted around 85% of the streets of Jenin refugee camp in the north, the municipality's director, Mahmoud Assaf, said. One quarter of the refugee camp's population has been forcibly displaced, the city's mayor said in a statement. Throughout January and February, the World Health Organization recorded more than 60 attacks on the healthcare across the West Bank, the vast majority in the northern area, where the Israeli regime has focused its attack.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Dozens more Palestinians, including another journalist, are killed in Israel's new strikes on Gaza as the regime's genocide rages on across the besieged territory. UNICEF says Israel's total blockade of Gaza has deprived over 1 million children of life-saving assistance for more than a month. The Yemeni army carries out a fresh anti-US operation in the Red Sea, targeting an American aircraft carrier and accompanying warships with missiles and drones. Thank you for joining us. More Palestinians have fallen victim to Israel's air and artillery strikes in Gaza as the regime's genocidal war rages on unabated across the besieged territory. At least 8 civilians, including a journalist, were killed and 20 wounded in Israeli shelling of a tent housing displaced people and a house west of the southern city of Khan Yunis. 2 Palestinians were killed and several others injured in separate strikes in Khan Yunis and Gaza City's Shujaiya neighborhood. 2 Israeli drone strikes also targeted a group of people in Shujaiya, killing 3 Palestinians. Another drone strike killed 6 Palestinians in Beit Hanun. Israeli forces bombed